From Chicago, this is Inside Politics, a weekly program of political discussion and intrigue with occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, power brokers, and public servants. I'm your host, Bruce Dumont. Thank you very much for joining us this week for our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, coming to you from the Radio Hall of Fame at the Museum of Broadcast Communications at the Chicago Cultural Center, and it's nice to have you with us. And we should also mention at the beginning of our program, if you'd like to hop on the phone line and join us, our toll-free number is 1-800-723-8289. In addition to our regular studio guests who have joined us, longtime listeners, at our flagship station at WBEZ Radio in Chicago, we are very pleased to have participants in the 23rd annual Loyola Radio Conference for being with us tonight. And folks, thank you very much for being with us. The future of American radio right here in the Radio Hall of Fame as we present tonight's program to you. And joining us to share their thoughts and political opinions as this program unfolds, let us first of all introduce the editor of the Christian Century magazine. He served as the special assistant to the Clinton-Gore campaign manager, David Wilhelm. He was also chairman of Senator Al Gore's 1988 presidential primary campaign in Illinois. Say hello to Jim Wall. Jim, thanks very much for being with us. On the Republican side, we welcome the 1987 Republican candidate for mayor of Chicago. He is professor of public management at Northwestern University's Kellogg Graduate School of Management, and he has served on the presidential transition teams of Gerald Ford and Jimmy Carter. Say hello to Don Hyder. Don, welcome to Inside Politics. It's nice to have you with us this week. Representing the Democrats, still with a big, big smile on her face, a member of the steering committee of the National Women's Political Caucus, say hello to Grace Kamikowitz. And last but not least, a man who was on the very first Inside Politics program in June of 1980, and he, like a Timex watch, takes a beating and keeps on ticking. Say hello to our card-carrying conservative Republican, Tom Roser. Tom, thanks very much for being with us this week and virtually for every week since 1980. It's nice to have you as part of this program.
Nice being here, brother.
It is time now for Know and Tell, that part of our program where we ask each guest to share with us for the first time something that they know that they now want to tell. And let's go now to the man with his hand on the pulse of Little Rock, Jim Wall.
Bruce, the results in the last election that elected Bill Clinton showed a remarkable recovery for Clinton in winning the religious vote. Tom will be sorry to hear about this, but in almost every religious category, he swept the field. Bush dropped in support in the Jewish community, for example, from 30% in the previous election to only 12% in this election. The Roman Catholics in this country went 44 to 30%. For Clinton, and the most important of all categories, Bush dropped from 80% to 55% among white Protestant evangelicals.
How much did Perot get of that last group?
Of the evangelicals, I couldn't give you the exact figure, but a small percentage.
All right. Grace Kamikowitz, tell us something that you know that you now want to tell.
Well, the New York Times ran a lengthy story describing the scare tactics used by conservative Richard Viguerie to raise money from the elderly. But that same entrepreneurial Mr. Viguerie is gearing up to drop millions of pieces of direct mail based on Bill Clinton's support of gays in the military, because homosexuality has become the single most effective theme for fundraising among conservatives.
Okay. Don Hyder, tell us something that you know that you now want to tell.
Well, I think for benefit of the local audience, since all politics are local, to bring it back at home, Governor Edgar is taking a terrible beating from the local media, being anti-Chicago, anti-jobs, and anti-casino. Watch for the proposed casino legislation to fail in this session of the legislature, and then watch for the governor to go on the offensive of his own pro-job and pro-growth program for the state of Illinois, including Illinois, in a widespread program for public works and economic development.
Tom Roser, after 1 week in the leadoff position in the new Clinton era, you've been dropped now to cleanup once again, where people usually are used to your big bat.
There is a when Bob Dole wept yesterday or the meeting of George Bush. Everyone was stunned because these were two absolutely people who were totally opposed to each other. Bob Dole has now today signed a pact with Jack Kemp so that Bob Dole will be the spear carrier for the conservatives in the Congress, and he understands at the age of 73 he cannot be president of the United States. He is going to back surreptitiously Jack Kemp. It's going to be a very vicious non-honeymoon for Bill Clinton.
Is that good for the country, Don Heider?
Short honeymoon or a long honeymoon? I think what you're going to see here is probably a longer honeymoon than most, simply because of the power that you have in Congress and the votes you have in the Congress. Whether it's good or bad for the country, that they form a loyal opposition, and the loyal opposition be formed early on is probably very beneficial to a vigorous debate on the issues.
Yeah, you know, I heard a lot of dissatisfaction with Bob Dole's mean-spirited comments the night of the election. There is a loyal opposition, and there is a nasty opposition, and he has reverted to his nasty self.
Well, he's always mean-spirited on election night. That's part of that's what made the country great.
Yeah.
If Bob Dole were to wake up as a nice guy, we think we're in a different country.
Well, he tried very hard to show this nice guy image when he was around George Bush this time.
Jamal? I suppose when you spend about 18 months trying to move your big toe after having been wounded seriously in the Second World War, I suppose you get a kind of a gut, kind of a feel that I think is pretty salutary for this country.
It will be a honeymoon, Bruce. It'll be a honeymoon because the country wants desperately to have this man succeed. They've put him in office, and they're going to give him some time. And I think if Dole continues his present demeanor, it's going to backfire on him. People say, give the guy a chance.
Bill Clinton had a press conference. He is going to seek tax breaks to create 500,000 jobs, speed up public works, allow abortion counseling at federally funded clinics, push to allow homosexuals in the military. He named a 48 transition aides, including policy experts. He promised a cabinet with women, minorities, and Republicans. And soon he's going to deal with ethics. He said he's going to put an end to finger-pointing and blame in Washington and will pursue, quote, a longer-term economic commitment, end of quote. And voters don't expect overnight miracles. Good rhetoric. Can he follow through on that, Don?
Good rhetoric. You're getting announcement a day out of Little Rock, and I think just to keep the momentum going, he's going to be dropping these pearls. You have to separate out what's the symbolic from what's the substantive. Much of it is simply symbolic of showpiecing my administration, things that he can do by executive order that he might want to do. But we're now getting down, as we will the next 30 days, 60 days, into the substantive. What are you concretely going to propose and what are you going to do?
Does he have to provide in the early days for the progressives in his party who voted for him but were not terribly excited with him? Does he have to provide and push the right social buttons on issues like, allowing the abortion counseling issue and homosexuality in the military? Does he have to feed all that to the left wing of the Democratic Party early on and then deal primarily with fiscal issues that might offend some of them later on? Jim?
I don't think so. I think the extreme left that wants everything no matter what is not going to get everything no matter what, but they're going to get some very concrete things that are substantive and important.
Such as?
Like the announcement today about the gays in the military. That's an absurd thing that the Bush administration had allowed to happen.
I think what he's going to have to do, and this is sort of a cliche, which I hate to bring up, but he's going to have to give freebies to the left, which is gay rights. He's going to have to go to the left on social policy, which doesn't cost anything, and he's going to have to be a conservative on fiscal policy, and I would expect that he would.
Our telephone number is 1-800-723-8289.
As some of you might remember, what did Mayor Daley do? This Mayor Daley do in his first 2 days in office. His first day in office were all executive orders reinstating or continuing the policies of Harold Washington on affirmative action and set aside in contracts. And the second day in office, he had to deal with a $150 million potential shortfall. And then we got down to the substance of what are you going to do to manage and run the city of Chicago.
You're making it sound, though, Bruce, as if he's doing this as an appeasement instead of as something that he really, truly cares about. And I think
I don't mean to suggest that. Oh, I think he does believe about all these things. But when you're president, you have to have a priority list of what you should do. And frankly, you have to look pragmatically at those who are really with you and those that are casually with you. And
I think
by executive
order,
you can make a lot of people in the traditional wing of the Democratic Party very happy with
some
of these
changes. Except for a handful of really extreme left wing of the party, everyone is with him. I mean, he really, I think he has very universal support among Democrats.
Bruce, I think that the whole thing is, it really boils down to the sign over Carville's desk, it's the economy, stupid. And I think that he's going to have to solve that problem. If he doesn't, all kinds of the exotic strains of the left aren't going to do anything at all. If he does, he's going to be reelected easily for a second term.
According to Congressman Dan Rostenkowski, chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, that Bill Clinton is likely to have to ask taxpayers to sacrifice as part of an overall economic program. He said that he expects the president-elect to ask the leadership to pass something that might be painful, but he went on to say that he found in his own reelection campaign, he thinks that voters really do want something done and are willing to have some degree of shared sacrifice.
Does everybody
agree with that?
Well, I think that's right. I would like to see Dan Rostenkowski stop, I suppose, golfing at Burning Tree, and one of those things that he might want to do was sort of, in a way, join the sacrifice. I think that would be lovely if the chairman of the House
Bruce, but isn't one there, of I mean, the things
does everybody in the audience think there has to be shared sacrifice if we're going to solve some of the country's problems? Applaud if you believe that.
Bruce, there was a CNN poll released today that showed exactly that people do not expect this to be easy and are expecting their taxes to go up even though other people's might not.
19 million people voted for Ross Perot. I would assume that many, if not all of them, believe in sacrifice because he was pushing for sacrifice. Now, the key, and this is where Bill Clinton's leadership is so crucial, the key is sacrifice that is fairly distributed, not distributed to the low and middle class income people the way the Bush and Reagan crowd did. So
let me remind the Reverend that Bill Clinton was singularly among, I suppose, the last 20 years is going around promising all kinds of people everything. He can't redeem it. And as a matter of fact, as a duplicitous kind of opportunist, he is going to have a very short honeymoon. And, Reverend, you are going to have tears in your eyes because, in fact, this man cannot produce anything. He can't square a circle. This guy's promised too much, and he can't deliver it.
Thomas, he has promised too much. You're kidding. The man has not even formed his transition team, and you've already given up
during the campaign, Reverend, which you probably
it's your
do
wish.
Not.
Let me give you an example, Bruce. Just one. It's why we're always citing that the Americans are prepared for sacrifice. A majority of Americans today, and even those that were Perot supporters, believe that the deficit that we face can be closed by eliminating fraud, waste, and abuse. If you, as a matter of point, eliminated all the domestic other spending in the government, other than entitlements, interest on the debt, or defense, you would cut the deficit by half. In other words, we're so far off the mark of what we mean by sacrifice. If Rostenkowski's meaning we're going to cap all these entitlements and set them on a new course, that's real pain. But I don't think the Clinton Party is thinking about that. From the Radio Hall of Fame in Chicago, you're listening to Inside Politics. I am Bruce Dumont, Don Heider, Tom Roser, Jim Wall, and Grace Kamikowitz are joining us. Our telephone number is 1-800-723-8289. 1-800-723-8289. Thank you very much for joining us this week on Inside Politics. We will continue in just a couple of minutes on the Inside Politics Radio Network. We'll be right back. Bruce Dumont back from the Radio Hall of Fame at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. National support for Inside Politics is provided by City and State, Crane's national newspaper of city and state government, by MCI Communications Corporation, the nation's second largest long-distance carrier, and by Raisin Corporation, private investment banking and corporate management. 1-800-723-8289 is our telephone number, and let's go to the telephone calls. Dennis, you're on the air.
Hello, I'd like to help some of the guests with their understanding of economics. It's really pretty simple, as Ross Perot might say, though I'm not a supporter of his by any means. What we have to do to get the economy going, there are five economic policies which are reliable in producing increased levels of economic activity. Number one, cutting tax rates. Number two, cutting spending. Number three, free trade. Number four, reduced economic regulation. And number five, a strong currency. If we do those things, we'll have the increased economic activity we want, and the economy will grow enough that we can have increased tax revenues and pay off the debt. It's that simple.
Is it that simple, Jim Wall?
I thought that,
are you taking notes?
I thought those five things lost. I mean, that's simply...
No, they weren't twice under Reagan. And Bush, unfortunately, reversed Reagan's policies in those areas, and that's why he lost.
Oh, I think the caller, whomever he is absolutely right. I don't think the policies lost. I think George Bush failed to present a kind of a consistent picture, which sort of blurred the whole thing. So he blew it, but I think the caller is absolutely on the mark.
Let's repeat that in the reverse order. What we're going to have now is increased taxes, more regulation, more spending, less free trade, and we put those all together, and that's going to equal economic growth.
Don, based on what? Based on what?
Based on what your candidate has said, Mr.
Not more taxes for you, Tom. Taxes for your friends, but not taxes for the middle class.
Let's go to Margie in Chicago. Go ahead, Margie.
Hi. Every election that I can remember, there's always been talk about possibly changing the way the Electoral College works. And I haven't heard anything this time, and I wondered if any of your panelists think that anything might still be done about it.
Nothing wrong with the Electoral College, except that it was wrong this year, but outside of that, I think it's fine. I think that, as a matter of fact, the founders were determined to not have a populistic government totally, and I think the Electoral College is a safeguard to that.
Grace?
Yeah, I think it's going to continue. There'll be talk. There'll always be talk about it, but they'll never get around to doing it. There are many more important things.
It's too sloppy right now. There's nothing wrong with the principle of the Electoral College, but there are too many loopholes that could slip in there. It's too easy for somebody not to vote for the person that was elected in a given state.
But isn't that the state that determines the rules?
It needs to be tightened up.
Don Heider?
Yeah, I think if you see a semblance of a third party emerging in the United States, which the probability is quite low, but if it does, I think you'll have increased attention to the Electoral College because you do have a ticking time bomb there.
When we thought that Perot was a serious candidate before he pulled out back in the summer, the Clinton campaign got very serious about the Electoral College to make it very sure that it's... electors were on the right side.
All right. Thank you very much for your call, Margie. We're going to go to the studio audience now. Your name and your question, sir.
My name is Mark Williams, and my question is to the Republican part of the panel. Do they think that family values will be an issue for the candidate 96?
I think so. I think that John C. Calhoun, who I remembered very well in 1857.
You went to the club together, didn't you?
We had a couple of drinks together. I think John C. Calhoun talked about concurrent majorities. I think that the battle on abortion and some of the family rights aspects have not been solved, and I think they'll continue. How they will continue, I don't know. I think, as a matter of fact, the introduction of RU486 is going to take the thing to the repository of the churches and to the private associations, which in fact will be just as vehement as ever before, but I don't think it's going to be that much of a heavy political issue, but I think it will be around for many years to come.
Don, you are known as more of a moderate Republican, at least more moderate than Tom Rosier. What are your thoughts on the future of social issues as part of a foundation that will help regain the White House for the Republicans
in 4 years.
Well, that's why you placed me to the right of Tom in our seating here for the audience. I think you're going to have a great battle within the Republican Party, a little on the not only on the economic front, but on the social issues and social values question between the more moderate wing and the conservative wing and the religious right. I think that will work its way through, and we're going to look for a candidate that somehow can bridge those gaps, both on the social questions and on the economic.
And it's already started.
Jim Wall?
With the leadership of the party.
Reverend Wall.
Bruce, the vote in this last election is very revealing at this point. Among Catholics, 60% voted for the combination of Perot and Clinton, and both Perot and Clinton are known to be pro-choice. Only 36% voted for Bush. Now, that has to tell you something, Tom, that the issue of choice is not going in your direction.
What it does tell you is the economic issues were more important than the social issues, and that doesn't mean...
That's exactly right.
Jim Wall...
Which means the rabidness of that issue is not going to prevail.
Jim Wall, let me ask you a question about choice of a different stripe. Grace, let me ask this question, and that is choice in education. You talked about the Catholic vote going for Bill Clinton. Now with now that the election is over, are you surprised the president didn't make more of an issue of choice in education and use that as an opportunity to reach out to Catholic voters much more so than he did?
I am surprised because he might have benefited from it, but he did not. He stated it, but he did not pursue it vigorously.
Okay.
He didn't pursue anything vigorously in the last 2 weeks except the Bozo theme, which did not.
Did he blow it, Tom, on that issue?
I think he blew it on a number of ways. I think that, as a matter of fact, the Houston Convention was an appalling thing because, in fact, it sounded like tin pot evangelists. I'm sorry to insult your, I suppose, trade, Reverend, but generally speaking, the far right of your trade even offends me. I think that, as a matter of fact, social values will be muted, but they will be delineated and solved in the private and independent sector.
You see, it sounded like a tin pot evangelist, but my recollection was, Tom, that in the wake of that convention, you were supportive of what Patrick Buchanan had to say and the way he said it.
If you play the tape, Bruce, you'll know that I'm a critic of Pat Buchanan, that I opposed his candidacy, that I thought that his speech itself as an intellectual exercise was superb.
Grace?
I just want to say, I think about the issue of choice, it is my assumption, and I can't prove it, that the Republicans left nothing to chance, and they must have done focus groups that showed it was not going to play real strong.
All right, we're going to go to the audience. Your name and your question, sir. We're a member of the Loyola Radio Conference.
My name is Brent Mazzarelli, and this is going towards the Democrats and the Republicans. I feel this is wrong. Do you think that it is wrong that a Republican president working with a Democratic Congress in reverse?
You think that it's wrong? I don't quite follow the question.
I don't think you can actually communicate with Democrats and Republicans and the Congress and the Republican.
You like them all under one tent? All of the same party?
Right. One of the things I think you're suggesting is the gridlock situation ought to break, because you now have the same party in charge of both
branches. But we got things accomplished under Richard Nixon and Gerald Ford, for example.
You know, one of the difficulties Republicans have and Democrats have alike is if you're in Grace's wing of the party, you forget that the greatest real increase in domestic spending in the country's history occurred under Richard Nixon. Now, the liberals, Democrats don't want to talk about it, neither do the Republicans. And then George Bush, in his first 3 years in office, you had the largest real increase in domestic spending of any president in his first 3 years in office, and you have the same phenomenon. So the question of who works with whom is usually in the eyes of the beholder.
I think that it's important to have absolute hostility between the president and the Congress, generally speaking, because I think that they embody two different constituencies, and I think that whether Mr. Clinton is a Democrat and the Congress is a Democrat or not, I think there's going to be reigning hostility within about 6 months after it's going.
Joining us now from Little Rock, Arkansas, is Paul Rice. He's the host of a weekly program called KARN Digest in Little Rock, Arkansas, and also he's the operations manager for the Arkansas Radio Network, and KARN is one of the member stations of the Inside Politics Radio Network. Paul, thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you. It's good to
how
be here.
How are things in Little Rock? I mean, how is this city dealing with not only the focus of the last year, but specifically the flood of reporters that have gone there since election night?
Well, I'd say probably we've realized a need for more hotels. It's really interesting. The people are almost watching a circus, as it were. This has become the biggest story for Arkansas. The only other big story that you could compare it to would be the Central High School event back in the 60s. And this is such a positive image for Arkansas that people are really glad to see it. They see it as an image booster, as an economic booster, and as a morale booster as well.
Now, there seems to be a discrepancy as to who is going to take over when Bill Clinton moves to Washington. And there's some question as to whether or not the lieutenant governor will move up.
Well, it has been decided by a court that the lieutenant governor will assume the duties of the governor's office. However, he won't receive any of the amenities of the governor's office. He'll still remain the lieutenant governor in name, but as I understand it, they are appealing that process.
Jim Wall, let me ask you, maybe you can answer this. When does the governor technically move to Washington and stay there? I mean, when is he going to give up the spot of governor?
You mean physically move to Washington?
Yeah, physically move.
January the 20th, I presume.
No, but is he going
to... Oh, January the 1st is what my understanding is.
Okay, so it is going to be the 1st.
Yes.
So he will resign the governorship of Arkansas at that point.
Yes, and somebody has to take over. And I don't know what they're going to do about his housing, because he doesn't have a home of his own in Arkansas. So.
What is the relationship between the lieutenant governor and the governor? Because they did not run together as a team. Because you've got some significant problems left in Arkansas that are still brewing, right?
That's true. There is right now probably the biggest two problems that they're facing is one, we're getting ready to go into a legislative session at the beginning of the year, which poses a big problem for Jim Guy Tucker, who is our lieutenant governor. He now has the problem facing him of setting this all up now basically on a moment's notice. Even though he's been preparing for it, he's finally gotten the go-ahead to do it. Now, in the interim period between the time of today, for example, and the time that Clinton does become president, they're asking the question, who is going to be making the decisions? Well, it seems to be a tug of war in opposite directions. Clinton is saying, Jim Guy, you handle it, while Jim Guy is saying, no, Bill, you're still governor, you handle it.
So maybe they want him to propose another tax hike on the way out to Washington? Is that a possibility?
Well, the second problem that they're facing is one with the Medicaid deficit here in Arkansas, which apparently Bill does not want to approach right now, being that he's in the national spotlight on economics and does not want to face the possibility of a tax increase in Arkansas.
Tom Bruce, Roser, and
I was
then
going
Dan
to,
Ryder.
I was going to ask another question about some of the economic legacy that young Lochinvar has left to the state of Arkansas. Will you tell us some of the things that this doesn't duplicate the Massachusetts miracle, but there is a kind of growing problem with the deficit, isn't there?
Well, I'd say that because of the inherent problem that we're not as big a population base as in most other states, we have our own unique situation economically.
What does that mean?
Excuse me?
What does that mean?
I don't really think you can compare us to Massachusetts in that Arkansas is kind of on its own in the world as far as the way we depend on ourselves.
Well, you have a low tax rate to begin with, do you not?
That's true, probably mostly because of the fact that we have a low income.
That's because nobody can pay taxes out there in that state.
Exactly.
Isn't it about 50th out of the 50th?
Don Heider has a question, and then we're going to have to move on.
Okay.
Well, the Kenny Bunkport question, the San Clemente, Eisenhower to Denver. There's talk that Mr. Clinton may seek his home away from home in California, or as Tom Wolf says, you could never go home again. Is there a feeling down there that once Clinton is gone, that he may abandon his home state?
Oh, gosh. The question is Clinton really going to be gone? Because it'll still be like he'll be governor since he'll be president. He has
almost three hometowns here as it is, with Little Rock being the capital, with Hot Springs and the town of Hope, Arkansas, also being a birthplace and places where he grew up. And there's also been a couple of other towns in northwestern Arkansas that...
Walsh controversy and the other controversy with the passport file, the two of them. Do you see them both developing or neither?
One lady got bounced. The lady that yes. led the investigation, she's already out the door. Her resumes are in the mail.
That's right. They've been invested. That was the controversy was the fact that the people in the State Department were investigating the passport files of both Ross Perot, Bill Clinton, and Bill Clinton's mother. and the woman who seemed to be responsible for that is gone. I don't think much more will come of that. The other is, of course, the controversy over the pardon of Caspar Weinberger. That's a tough one.
On that note, we have to pause. You're listening to Inside Politics, coming to you from Chicago. Our telephone number is 1-800-723-8289. You're listening to this program on the Inside Politics Radio Network. Back from the Radio Hall of Fame. Thank you very much for joining us this week for Inside Politics. If you live in Chicago or are coming to Chicago and would like to be part of our studio audience, all you have to do is call and let us know the date you are coming and the number of seats to reserve. We produce this program effective next week on Friday, each Friday at noon, Chicago time, at the Chicago Cultural Center, Michigan Avenue at Washington Street. And all you have to do is call 312-629-6019, 24 hours a day. That's 312-629-6019. And be sure to leave your name and telephone number. That's 312-629-6019. If you're listening around the country and are coming to Chicago, we would love to have you with us Friday at noon, effective November 20th. Tom Roser, you had a comment to make, or did I stop you?
Well, no, I was just talking.
I usually do.
I was just I was talking to Bill Schneider. We're talking about Jack Kemp, our mutual friend, and I think Kemp suffers from the fact that he's so far the front runner at this very early stage. The heir apparent that he's a sitting duck. I think his big competitor is not going to be Buchanan. It's going to be Bill Bennett.
Yeah. I think Kemp is now the gallant knight who a lot of people expect to save the Republican Party. He has a couple of things that have been conspicuously absent in the Republican administrations in recent years. One is ideas, and the other is heart. Jack Kemp has an enormous amount of heart.
That's right.
But he has a problem. I think Jack Kemp is a consensus builder. That's his style of politics. He has a certain legitimacy to the religious right and to conservatives as well as to moderates. The problem is I'm not sure the Republican Party is looking for consensus right now. I think there's an awful lot of interest in having it out between the religious right and the moderates, and a lot of people on both sides aren't looking for someone to make peace, but for someone to carry their banner, to either carry the flag for Pat Robertson, who wants to take over the Republican Party, or for the moderates who want to say this is not Pat Robertson's party, this is our party, and I'm not sure Kemp is that kind of candidate.
Before we move too quickly to 1996, I'd like to come back and get more analysis from Reverend Jim Wall as you look at all of the numbers. This was a very unique coalition that Bill Clinton put together, and again, you have the Perot factor, and if there's some way that you can make friends and bring that Perot a phenomenon into the fold as either personal or party supporters of Clinton and the Democratic Party, you may be controlling the playing field for a long, long time. It may be very tough, whether it's with Jack Kemp or anyone else, to get back in the ballgame.
It's certainly doable to win that group, especially if we show the kind of discipline and concern for the economy that the Perot people were asking us to note. But I think I should make a point here to speak against Bill Schneider's conviction that this was a McGovern vote, because according to this recent survey of religious voters, from New Mexico to Massachusetts, Clinton won in all 12 of the nation's most heavily Catholic states, the first Democratic sweep of those states since Lyndon Johnson did it in 1964.
That's right.
This was not the McGovern vote.
The largest number of Reagan Democrats came home.
Yes, there's no doubt about it, and there's no doubt about that among Catholic voters as every other, I think, ideological group. But certainly Catholic voters, the economy played the major part.
And I'd like Bill to make some comment. This more than anything else that people look at elections in the past was a vote of no confidence, much more than it gives any indication, as Jim is hinting, and you... You are suggesting that this is a realigning election. This by no means has any evidence it's realigning.
Clinton got 43% of the vote. That's 3 points worse than Michael Dukakis. Chiseled on Michael Dukakis' tombstones will be the words, he did 3 points better than Bill Clinton. Now, 43% is exactly the vote that Richard Nixon got when he won a three-way race in 1968. For all the Bob Dole's comments who say 57% of the people didn't vote for Bill Clinton, the Republicans took that 43% in 1968 that Richard Nixon got, and they used it as a base to build a presidential majority that lasted 25 years. How did they do it? They folded in the Wallace vote. Wallace got 14% of the vote. Nixon and Agnew made it their business in the next 4 years to pursue a Southern strategy, reach out to the Wallace vote, combine that with the 43% Republican base and build a majority. That's the challenge to Bill Clinton. Can he hold the base that he got in this election and fold in the Ross Perot vote?
And that's the challenge also to the Republicans, as a matter of fact.
And one of the first things he's done in that regard is talk about ethics reform, which was one of the things that Perot talked about.
Speaking of challenges to Bill Clinton, whether it's Bill Clinton or any president, when you have a new player with relatively little experience in the international scene, you usually can have some world leader who wants to test him. Where do you think the first test internationally of the Clinton presidency will occur? Don Heider, will go right around the table.
I think if all the news stories we're getting out of Russia have any credibility, that Boris Yeltsin's downfall and the resurgence of the military to move in for establishing stability over there will be the first test.
Tom?
I think militant fundamental Mohammedism or Muslimism is going to be the challenge, and Jim Wall knows far better than I. That's going to be the challenge when these guys start working their problems in Algeria and everything else. That's going to be a terrible problem for the president.
Bill Schneider.
I think...
Let's get Bill's response.
The biggest threat is that the Middle East peace talks, which have showed slow but significant progress under the Bush administration, will suddenly unravel without Jim Baker to hold them together. If that were to happen within the first few months of a Clinton presidency, it would be a great embarrassment.
Grace?
I really don't think that's what's going to happen. I think his first, so to speak, crisis isn't going to be a bully trying to push him, but it's going to be having to make a decision on something like the Serbian-Bosnian problem.
The issue of somebody pushing him really is an issue that we had in the Cold War. I don't think you have that kind of a problem now. You have a superpower, one left remaining superpower, and I don't think you're going to have some little tyrant trying to challenge us. I don't really think Saddam Hussein meant to challenge us. I think he was horrified when he realized what a hornet's nest he stirred up. But I would go back to Bill's point about, and not to challenge us, but he wanted to get a little piece of Kuwait only and leave it at that. Go back to Bill's point about the Middle East. I think you're putting too much stock in James Baker. Jimmy Carter is still a player in this world, and he has been in very close conversations with Bill Clinton from the very beginning of this campaign. The two men are close, and I think you can look for Jimmy Carter to be a confidential advisor because of his connections to the various leaders in the Middle East. And I think he will have a lot to do with making those peace programs
go. Possibly a roving ambassador.
Tom, I want to get your reaction than everyone. Is there a fear, and we should mention that, Jim Wall, you were the first person in the state of Illinois to support Jimmy Carter when no one knew who he was. You were out there on the campaign trail in 1976 with Jimmy Carter, and when he was the president of the United States, he stayed in your home in Elmhurst when he came in as the president. So you're a longtime supporter of Jimmy Carter. Is there a fear on anyone on the panel that if there is some international incident, that because of a perception that the past Democratic president was weak in international affairs, that President Clinton might overreact to a challenge for fear of being tagged as a Carter-era president? Don Heider.
Yes.
Well, I think there is, because I think the history of the United States recently has been that when presidents are attacked on one thing, for example, President Truman being attacked for having, quote, lost China, we entered the Korean War, which was absolutely a war in which we didn't have to enter. I think this president is going to have to try to restrain himself. He's regarded as a draft dodger, and he should continue to be as president.
I hate to use a George Bush word, but I will use the word prudent, because I think these are the two sides of Bill Clinton that Bill Schneider was talking about. He is strong, and yet he is also prudent, and he's not going to go off half-cocked and do anything crazy.
The scenario Bruce just described is what I call the Bay of Pigs scenario, which happened very quickly when John Kennedy became president, and it proved to be a disaster, although actually his popularity went up. I think there is some danger, and Grace, I think, made a good point about Yugoslavia, or what was once Yugoslavia, as being a difficult situation, because in the campaign, Clinton went to the right of George Bush and talked about getting militarily involved. That, I think, could lead him into making a serious mistake.
Jim Wall, your comment.
Well, my concern about this talk about taking action is that, again, that's a Cold War kinds of discussion. Colin Powell made a very good point that if you're going to go in and settle military problems, you'd better go in with all guns blaring, which is what he advocated to the president. You want to do this in Kuwait against Iraq? This is the only way you can do it. Now, you're not going to have very many cases in this world right now where you can go in with all of these guns that we possess blazing. No, I don't think he's going to have to show his toughness by dropping massive amounts of bombs on any one of the cities.
You don't think because he sat out the Cold War himself
I hope that need of yours to bring that subject up will soon pass, because I think the issue is the Vietnam War is over.
And
American people just voted for that.
And he played no role in it.
We're going to go to the audience.
He played no role in it. We know that.
We're going to go to the audience. Your name and your question, sir.
John Jasinski. I'd like to know from the panel, what will Dan Quayle do now in the next 4 years? No, and also, what will Al Gore's impact be in the administration?
Well, the derisive laughter, which sort of shows the ideological content of this audience. Despite that, Dan Quayle is going to be a very wealthy lawyer, and he's not going to run for office again.
He's going to play a lot of golf.
Grace?
Well, one of the questions I wanted to ask when we went to break was, what kind of platform is Jack Kemp going to have to continue to promote his candidacy for 96?
Oh, I think what Jack Kemp will do following is leaving HUD, is going to be in a think tank, probably AEI or Heritage, and he's going to travel the country. It's going to be that kind of thing. Ideologically, and I think as a gifted guy, he doesn't need a platform. He was born in California, lived in New York, lived in Washington. His platform is a platform of ideas. And I think
and to go with that, with Tom, one of the things you do as a presidential suitor is you wait for the midterm elections and you spend your time out there beating the pads and gaining favors and winning over the party members. Well, this discussion,
and you got to find where the mistakes are.
That's right.
But there's one thing we can't cure. Bill Clinton could cure every social ill, every problem that the United States has, and by golly, in 1996, the Republicans are still going to appoint someone to run against them.
Yeah. And one of the things we're making about the foreign policy, all too quickly the transition ends because you do have crises and because you're overtaken by events, and foreign policy quickly usurps domestic policy.
The most significant thing that was more questions from the audience, Tom. I know you don't want to usurp this question. Your name and your question, sir.
Tracy Steele. I understand the concern with foreign policy, but Bill Clinton was elected on his economic platform. He was governor of Arkansas, a relatively tiny economy, and he's apparently not done a very good job there. What makes us think that he'll do a good job as a president?
Jim Wall?
I just feel
an irate voter.
I just feel as though the election is over, and we went through this for the last 13 months about the poor job he was not supposed to have done. I think Bill Clinton made the case over and over again. The achievements of in Arkansas are very significant.
The answer is Reverend Wall has a leap of faith.
I think if you go back and look at the campaign, you will see that he did things in Arkansas that Arkansas needed to have done.
I can hardly wait till 4 years from now, Tom. I can hardly wait.
Well, I don't think
I'm
we can either,
ahead.
Can we, Tom? Hope it passes quickly, Grace.
It's going to be a long 4 years, Tom.
Yeah. Bill Schneider.
Oh, I think that basically it was the triumph of hope over experience in this election. He did not run on his Arkansas record. That was Michael Dukakis' mistake. Remember that. He didn't run because he had done miracles in Arkansas. He ran on the idea that he had a plan and a program. He had a lot of smart people around him, a lot of ideas for getting the economy moving. And the American people just said to Bill Clinton, do something. That's all right. Our polling indicated there was no lurch to the left here. That's people right. Just said, do something. We'll let you know if it works.
And I do say that the American people, like a guy sitting in front of a television set with a clicker, if it doesn't work, you're history.
That's right.
And speaking of a clicker and history, I want to thank Tom Roser and Grace Komakiewicz and Jim Wall, Don Heider, and Bill Schneider for being with us tonight. As you know, this is our last program on WBEZ Radio in Chicago. It has been my delight to be the host of this program on WBEZ since 1980. On Sunday night, November 22nd, this program can be heard on WLS Radio, AM and FM, at 8 o'clock. We will be recording this program every Friday afternoon at noon. If you have been part of our Inside Politics family for the last 12 years, we hope that you will stay with us in our new home on WLS. I really appreciate all of the efforts that WBEZ has provided and opportunities over the last 12 years. And also to our producer, David Resnick, we thank you very much for your support. Inside Politics is a Jenny B. production produced in association with Chicagoland Public Radio. Steve Ryan is our executive producer. David Resnick, our producer. Beth Scanlon, our associate producer. Mike Gilmore is our engineer. For all of them, this is Bruce Dumont saying thanks to you for being with us tonight and for the last 12 years. So long from Chicago.
Well, I think I thought that one of the humor, I mean, the paper that says it prints all the news it's fit to print today published a story on Senator Bob Kerry with a picture of Senator John Kerry from the state of Massachusetts.
And that's going to be his
I
problem.
Think that will be, no, I think Senator Kerry, I mean, let's lay out the field here. Brown's going to run on a message of people's disaffection with the political process. Harkin's going to run on a message about people's anger about their economic position. That's right. Bill Clinton will run on a message of being outside of Washington but has the experience that can take over.
And being Father of the Year.
Father of the Year. And Senator Bob Kerry will run on a campaign that plays both to his experience in Vietnam, his patriotism, his heart of coming from the heartland, and his
Absolutely.
Sense of just decent American values. And I think in that field you'll see the candidacies emerge.
I
shouldn't also exclude Governor Wilder, who will be also a wild card in this field, because he does, on Super Tuesday, have a big play to make in the primaries. And I think Clinton, in that scenario, I would say Clinton takes away Governor Moonbeam's message, occupies that space. I leave it to Clinton and then Kerry to fight it out.
At this moment, I would like to get the reaction from the other representatives at the panel this evening. Tell us at this moment in time who you believe will be the Democrat, not who you want to be the Democratic candidate, who you believe will be the Democratic candidate at this moment in time when we end up at the Democratic convention
in
July. Can I
ask one qualifying question?
No.
Are we talking about the current list of candidates? Or
no, anybody. Who do you think, in other words, in New York City in July of 1992, when they play Happy Days Are Here Again, who's going to be entering the hall as the Democratic nominee, in your view? Chris Bowman.
I think it'll be Lloyd Benson and either Kerry or Clinton as the running mate.
Very interesting. Grace Kaminkiewicz.
Well, someone, and I don't agree with this, someone today at lunch told me, a Democratic elected official, that it was going to be Cuomo and Ann Richards.
What do you think?
Was a very interesting... I do not think, despite what Rahm said about Cuomo resigning and running, I do not think it's going to be Cuomo. And I
You think it will be?
Well, you know, for all I know, it could be Clinton. I think we're going to go for somebody with a much more conservative streak this time.
Do you want to pick a running mate, as Chris did, or you want to avoid that?
No, I'm not eager to pick a running mate.
Tom Roser, look across the aisle into the Democratic crystal ball and tell us who George Bush's opponent will be.
I think I go with Chris. I think it's going to be Lloyd Benson and Kerry of Nebraska, and it'll be a good ticket, generally speaking.
Be a very good ticket.
Narrowed it down. Who do you think's the who do you think the nominee will be?
If Cuomo gets in, it's Cuomo. But if he doesn't, it's Kerry and Clinton. That's the ticket.
Kerry and
in
Clinton.
That order.
Right. Exactly.
Oh, that's interesting.
U.S. Senator, former governor, Kerry out of Nebraska.
Ticket.
Clinton as the lieutenant.
Don't you find
vice
it
president.
Interesting that you got Kerry and Clinton and Harkin, the Midwestern boys?
Yeah, because we've learned the Northeast isn't playing.
And I think
Paul Tsongas' name never came up in this conversation.
It hasn't come up in a lot of conversations.
Last Sunday, and by the way, Senator Paul Tsongas, the first Democrat into the presidential field, will be a guest on this program in the next couple of weeks. Sunday of this past week, AIDS activists made a symbolic march on President Bush's seaside home in Kennebunkport. The group known as ACT UP staged the march and a mock die-in along the road to Bush's home to urge more federal money for research into AIDS research. Do you believe that as the campaign for 1992 gets rolling, that ACT UP and the more militant members of the American gay political community are going to exercise their right and force the AIDS issue into the national political campaign agenda? Grace.
Yeah, I think they will, but not just them. I think all of the militant groups, and including Operation Rescue type people, are going to enter into the political fray because they've been able to capture television coverage, and that's part of putting their agenda in front of the public.
Chris.
I agree with Grace. I think it'll be ACT UP. It'll be the groups all along it. You can't have
any issue.
Yeah, any. But you can't have a disease like AIDS that has affected so many people. Not only, obviously, everyone knows who people have died. It's just got to be too big of an issue. It'll be an issue on the domestic agenda.
Tom Roser.
I think increasingly movement politics is determining agendas, and I think the ACT UP people, as well as the pro-life people and the Operation Rescue people, the feminists, everybody else is going to be involved in that cauldron of pot, which, in fact, will influence politics.
Rahm.
There is no doubt that ACT UP will influence the debate during the presidential election, and they have a fair issue to discuss, which is the proper level of funding towards AIDS research and AIDS care for patients. But I never want to lose the opportunity, though, to separate the ACT UP group from other members that try to use this kind of coming out or forcing people out of the closet. There's been a discussion about one of the gay newspapers about releasing the name of an individual in the Pentagon who is supposedly gay. No, but what I want to make reference here is I never lose time to do this. the use of those type of tactics
should
be
reprehensible,
deplorable, and using the tactics of your enemies to somehow embarrass or shun somebody. A person has control over their private life, not another group. And I think it's deplorable.
I agree.
And it should be separated,
it hurts
though.
The cause,
it's not just hurts the cause. It's wrong to use tactics like that.
On the issue of tactics, is it wrong for ACT UP to go to Kennebunkport, Maine, to get the president's attention? Give me a yes or no, Tom Roser.
No.
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 Okay. In Illinois today, there was a drawing of significance. The Illinois Secretary of State, George Ryan, pulled a name out of the hat, which gave control of the legislative remap process for 1992 to the Republicans. A similar drawing 10 years ago gave the nod to the Democrats, and the Democrats and Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan dominated the 1980s. And it looks as though that the Republicans are going to make a tremendous comeback in the 1990s. What significance does it have in Illinois, Chris Bowman, and also what does it say for presidential politics in the future?
It's an extreme. It's almost as it could be more significant than what the Democrats got in 1981. As you look at the map, that if the Republican map goes through, which it will, I think we're 32 seats in the state Senate. I think we're probably around 56 to 58 seats in the House, which brings it very close. Edgar will be a far stronger governor. He did a good job this year, be a far stronger governor. The congressional map, where we got annihilated last decade, the congressional map, we're going to be competitive in the old 16th district now. John Cox, he still has strength there, but we'd be competitive there.
John Cox replaced Lynn Martin.
Right, you got Terry Bruce lumped in now with
Gene Pritchard.
Central Illinois.
Right,
Southern Illinois.
Sangmeister is not a shoo-in against Tom Ewing. They've been thrown in together. So I see us picking up minimum one congressional seats, maybe three.
Rahm Emanuel.
Without a doubt, the impact will be the Republicans will regain control of the state Senate. B, Speaker Madigan will become a much more ecumenical person. And C, I think the fact that the Democrat gains in the congressional level, which went from 12-12 to 14-8, will start to be diminished to a closer level of parity on that level.
15-7. I never put it past the Republicans to fritter away their advantage with crummy candidates, because they lost seats after the map, which was favorable to Democrats. They still threw away safe Republican seats. And I never underestimate their ability to self-destruct.
I agree with Grace, and I think also that we are going to pick up the state Senate in Illinois, but I think we're going to fall far short in the House. I think Madigan will be a more moderating figure, and I think we will pick up a couple of congressional seats for the Republican Party. A net gain for the Republican.
You're going to see State President Pete Phillip, and I think look for Phil Rock maybe to step out and look at the Supreme Court.
One last point I'd like to make is I think whatever map wins, Dan Roskinkowski will still have a safe congressional seat.
I think the Republicans will help that, too.
Yes.
You don't think the call from the big house came, did you?
If you look at our map, he'll be happy.
You think we could get the phone credit out of the White House, see what calls were made?
On that note, we say farewell to Rahm Emanuel, Vice President of the Research Group, for joining us this week. Chris Bowman, former Director of the Political Operations of the Republican National Committee. Grace Kominkiewicz, National Steering Committee of the National Women's Political Caucus, and a Democratic political consultant. Tom Roser is also a consultant in the city of Chicago. He is founder of the Republican Assembly of Illinois and a columnist for Crain's Chicago Business. I'm Bruce Dumont. Thank you very much for joining us this week on Inside Politics. We'll be back next week, same time, same station. Until then, so long from Chicago.